from the theme park capital of the world, bringing you the latest in theme park and pop culture news. Welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast. I'm Clint.
I'm Barry, and we have a special guest.
Brian, say hello.
Hello, people.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
This is your second time, right?
Yes, second time.
Brian's been bugging me left and right to get on and talk Halloween Horror Nights, so yes. I figured I'd get him on our very last stint here of Halloween Horror Nights goodness, and
yeah, it's time for us to put HHN 28 to bed, and so we will talk about it for one final time.
Yes.
Until next year when we get to speculate, when they start announcing houses and we'll start comparing things. But yeah, we're gonna talk behind the Screams tour. We're gonna talk the final night, and then we're finally going to give our list of the top scare zones, top houses. And then at the end, we're going to tease somewhere Thrill Geek's going in the month of December. So, yeah, let's kick it off with I got to do the basically the final behind of the Screams tour of the year yesterday. You know, some people were like, "Why didn't you do it early?" Well, part of it was because it was a wedding present. So, and part of it was scheduling. So, we got to do the six house tour, which is the big tour, The six house tour lasts, it was 5 hours total, including the break that you got. So it's a long tour. You spend a lot of time in the houses.
Yeah.
The first part of the tour was Poltergeist, Stranger Things, and Carnival Graveyard, which, I mean, you couldn't ask better to get a look at behind the scenes of those three houses. And, I mean, it was really cool seeing Poltergeist with the lights on, because so often going through it, especially majority of the time I went through it, was when it was daylight outside. So it is, you know, your eyes aren't adjusted, so it is so dark, especially in the beginning part of that house. It was really neat to see it with the lights on, and especially the burial ground part in the first part, where you could actually see parts of it that you walk through. It looks like you're walking through like the maw of a monster, because like it's almost like stalactites at the top that look like teeth.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And the funny thing was to find out like when you go into the light, which I had forgotten from the movie, you're going into the closet, but at night when you go through it, you can't really see that there's a closet there, because you're being blinded by the light.
Blinded by the light.
So when the lights were on, you could actually see the closet and all the like toys and stuff that were in the closet. You know, Stranger Things was really cool to see with the lights on, because you could see a lot of the details and how much they went in to make that place look set accurate. And they even had some people who came down from Atlanta, from Georgia, where they filmed Stranger Things. And who worked on the show and couldn't believe how much they recreated, like, accurately.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
From the sets. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it was just some people who've been on the crew of the show came and visited, and they couldn't believe how accurate they were with some of the set pieces that they did. Which we've said, I mean, going through that house, it's literally going like you're stepping into that show. They did an amazing job. And then we went through Carnival Graveyard, which, I mean, as we all know, is loaded full of Easter eggs, and we were told about so many, on top of the ones a lot of people already knew with Jack and other things. It was amazing to see all the different Easter eggs, and just how much stuff, especially with the lights on, is packed into that maze. It's pretty crazy.
Looks like a junkyard.
Yeah.
Hey! I mean,
it is. It's a junkyard where, you know, the carnies have lived there, and they don't like trespassers. And
actually, Actually, the funny thing is I actually saw a picture on Twitter today. There was actually another icon that is actually there. It's actually the Usher from the movie theater is actually inside Carnival Graveyard. So
yeah, they showed us when you go into the entrance, the sign you see to the right is from the marquee of the Usher's theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
And then the big rumor is the little I'm back sign that showed up last night.
Mm-hmm.
Some people were like, "Oh, Jack." It's like, no. There's now the rumor is that maybe the Usher will be back next year.
Ooh.
You got a break, and then you went to through Scary Tales, and you know we all know how amazing that facade is, all lit up. And I can tell you, even with the lights on, it's pretty jaw dropping, and you can see some more of the details. Just really with the lights turned on, so you can, you know, really see the ceiling of the soundstage, gives you an idea of how huge that thing is.
Yeah, the Scary Tales mm-hmm. facade always, every time I went through that house, it blew me away.
It's massive. I was like, oh my god, that witch on that tether, oh my goodness.
So it was really neat to see it with the lights on. And there, it was interesting to see they talked about a couple of scares in there that I've actually never seen them do. Like where the scarecrow is, there's allegedly can be a witch there. Hmm. And like she punches her fist through like his chest. But then, right around the corner, there's a boo hole there, and she can pop out there, which I've never seen. So I don't know if it got executed. Maybe it was at the beginning of the event, because we know they must have lost a lot of witches, because there was a lot more. We rarely ever saw the scare at the end where she jumps down that thing at you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and there originally there was a in the mirror part. There was a witch actually in the middle of it, so it was interesting to hear about some of that stuff that I never got to see. And if it is, it probably was only maybe the first weekend too before they. It seems like they lost some witches, because you know some of those witch scares definitely disappeared.
Yeah, from what I remember, the beginning of the event, they had a lot of witches.
Yeah, and then
in certain places
by the end, especially those last couple witches, half mm-hmm. the time that one big scare, there was never anybody there. So
yeah,
but
I think the one thing that got me a little bit was that rotten egg smell by the Humpty Dumpty section. Oh man,
yeah, they mentioned that smell is unlike, you know, like say Hansel and Gretel, where they use the smell machine. And they mm-hmm. pointed out like where it is, and that smell is mixed into the mist that you get spritzed with. So that's actually one of the different ways when they, you know, usually it's a smell machine that they use that puts the smell in there, but actually this in that case the smell is mixed into the mist that they trigger.
So it's just sulfur water, pretty much, because it smelled like crap.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's funny because like the smell stuff is actually made by this company that their original thing was to create like smells and stuff for like hospitals and businesses, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially for like hospitals to cover up, a lot of bodily fluids and mm-hmm. things happen in hospitals, so they, you know, want to cover that up. Well, they ended up creating this section. There's a section of their company website, though, that you have to have a password to access that has the Halloween smells. So that's where they get stuff like the vomit smell and the crap smell and stuff like that. So it's like, wow. It's funny. It's the same company that does stuff for like hospitals and businesses. Also that's where they get the Halloween stuff from. But then we moved to the back of the park and went through Seeds of Extinction, which that's another heavy Easter egg house, and that's another one with the lights on. You see so much more of the detail that went into that house, and you know, to find things like you know the part where the plane crashed is, you know, that's an actual real Cessna plane that they cut up. It's not some sort of prop plane that was created. It's an actual real plane that they bought and destroyed.
That's my gulp.
Yeah, and the lightning gulp, you know, you could see, you could really see the detail, not just the sign on the door, but then over by the drink machine, you could actually see the big, you could really see the detail.
Hard 20-ounce lightning gulp.
Yeah, the lightning gulp cups, and it gave me a little bit more appreciation for that house, which I'm not the biggest fan of. And then the last house was Trick or Treat, and it was really neat with the lights on, give you an idea of, like, you know, how tall they went on a lot of those facades in that house. Which is something they don't really normally do. Well, no, they did. I remember the Walking Dead one in there that had the prison where you ended it, and you went through one part where the prison, and they actually had like a two stories tall.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that set was huge.
Yeah, but a lot of times the sets in that building, they don't really build them up that big. So it really gave you an idea of how huge it was, and how, like, the different houses butt up against each other, so it was really interesting. I would definitely recommend it. I know it's pricey. I mean, it helped that I didn't have to pay for it this year, but I definitely think it's something I'm going to do every year from now, because I think especially the Six House Tour, it's well worth the money.
Yeah,
to go on, and it's really, but I definitely, you get a break in the middle, and before you leave, they do offer you the option to order a lunch.
Oh, nice.
I would recommend that, because I didn't even think about how long this tour was. So my lunch ended up being some Diet Coke and peanut M&Ms, which, you know, Clint knows. By the time he got to me, that night, I was, like, starving.
So we had Finnegan's.
So we might as well get in. But like I said, it's worth the money. I know it's pricey, but it's, I mean, for what you get, especially, I mean, it's a five-hour-long tour. 120 was it starts at, I think, at 129 or something.
Yeah,
that's not a bad price for that kind of tour.
It's really not that bad,
and you get a lanyard. Yeah,
yay, lanyard.
but no, it was a really well done. It helped the tour guy we had, Jared, really knew his stuff. They really,
that always helps.
Yeah,
they seem to put the. They seem to put the people, and a lot of the tour guides on there have been RIP tour guides. So they seem to put the people on there who really know their stuff about how. I mean, not just about the event this year, but I mean, he talked about different stuff throughout the history of Halloween Horror Nights.
That's cool. That's
awesome. So it's definitely, I would totally recommend it. It's worth the money. But you know, that was the beginning part of my day, and the last part, you know, I did stay and scream, and you know. I knocked out six houses before Clint got there for the final night, and we sort of just hung out the final night.
Yeah, by last night, you know, I'm not done with the event, but we both had gotten our fair share of houses run through, so we just kind of hung out last night, really just kind of hung out in the scare zones and took it all in one last time. And there were some interesting things that happened on the final night, some things in Killer Clowns. They did their usual dance parties at the end of the night, which are always a blast to be a part of. They had a conga line going with all amazing. The clowns. Yeah. You know, and you could tell they were getting a little more... what's the word?
Emotional.
A little more emotional. And
it was definitely weird. It was definitely fun and weird and interesting to see, especially the final dance party, to see all these clowns hugging each other. Men and women in clown suits hugging each other. And this was different. I mean, I've been going 13 years. You've been going since you were a kid.
Yeah.
And normally, you know, the years I've been there for the final nights, which has usually been, you know, any of the years I've had Frequent Fear. I haven't had Frequent Fear every year. But the last night, usually I'm always ending in the final Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
And with that gone, it was very, I knew, especially with how much time spent in Killer Clowns and Vamp 85. Mm-hmm. And also having so many people I know who are part of those zones. Mm-hmm. I knew my plan pretty much, once we got towards the end was we're going to finish there. And the great thing with it too is Killer Clowns, they end their zone a little bit before the park closes. Mm-hmm. And then Vamp does their final ball drop literally at park close.
Yeah.
So
you
can experience both things. So
there was a rumor that the clowns were going to go over to Vamp 85 at one point in the last few minutes of the event, but that never ended up happening.
I feel like I know for a fact that was an idea that was supposed to happen, but I think they got so tied up with, because by the time the final dance party happened, the other cast was out of their costumes and had made their way over there too. So
yeah,
it ended up becoming a giant hug fest, and when Clint and I ran over, they were all just taking pictures and stuff.
Yeah, and I think I saw for Twisted Tradition. I think they were I saw the like scares were with their shaker cans and everybody ganging up on the high schoolers and everything. So I saw that.
Each scare zone normally does something at the end of the night. Usually the other casts, they change out of their costumes, get their makeup off, and get back out there to and the cool thing, the other Vamp cast actually came over to Killer Clowns. Mm-hmm. and we're hanging out there too for the final dance party. Then we went to the final ball drop, and that was really cool too, because you had the final cast still out there, that it was there in, but the other cast was out there too. And
they were still in costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there was
there was the ball drop where both casts were out.
Yeah.
The other cast came out early before the switchover. Mm-hmm. and they did one ball drop, and then pretty much the other cast came out in their street clothes at the end of the night, and we're all there for the final ball drop. And it was definitely different, because like I said, usually ending with Bill and Ted, by the time you got out of that final Bill and Ted, most of the park was empty.
Yeah.
Except for some of the houses that still had people coming out of them.
I gotta say, at least I can clear my brain and not hear and shoot the through a thrill of constantly playing over.
You say that for me. I swear to God, all I have heard anytime I close my eyes today is either stuff
Killer Clowns from
Killer Clowns or stuff from Vamp. That's all.
Exactly.
It's gonna take a while to get that out of my head, because I spent
Killer
so much
Clown, time. Wow. Ooh.
I spent so much time in those zones this year.
We love you, John.
Yes, we love you, John.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the other thing that made Killer Clown special, is getting to meet, the creators of it, to meet the Chiodo brothers and chat with them. Getting to meet John Massari, but getting to hang out with him and interview him.
He seems to sound like a cool guy to really hang
very out with. All of them were very nice, and mm-hmm. also getting to sit there and chat and hang out with Blake Braswell and Mike Aiello in the zone, because mm-hmm. this, especially for Mike, this has been something they have wanted forever.
Mm-hmm.
And to see talk to them about it and how well it was executed.
Now, do you guys think that Sci-Fi had any hopes for a sequel for Killer Clowns, or no?
We didn't bring it up in the interview with John was the fact he can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, if he can't talk about it or really comment on it,
mm-hmm.
to me, I hope that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that means maybe this might actually be a sequel and not a reboot.
Yeah.
But much like many people, I used to watch Sci-Fi on a regular basis. I haven't watched Sci-Fi in years,
because mm-hmm.
they really lost me.
I used to watch it constantly with Ghost Hunter, especially when Graham Wilson was on the
RPG, yeah. I obviously Battlestar Galactica and. Mm-hmm. and Stargate and even going all the way back to Farscape.
Yeah.
I used to love
Farscape.
I used to love Sci-Fi Channel. So, fingers crossed, we know what all the fans want.
Exactly.
Is a sequel. Which, I mean, they could easily do a sequel soft reboot. You know, it's not, it wouldn't be that complicated. But, you know, I mean, we'll cross that bridge with it when it goes. But I think this is definitely, you know, Universal-owned sci-fi. So, I think that this, with the success of them at the event this year, has definitely shown a lot of people that, hey, I think not just for Killer Clowns, but some of these other cult horror classics out there, you know, they've now done two in a row now with Trick or Treat, which is a newer cult classic, and then Killer Clowns. There's a lot of other stuff out there that maybe they might consider, that might finally get a shot, because I know there's a few other cult horror things that they've been chomping at the bit to get at. I mean, they got two of their white whales this year. They got Killer Clowns and Poltergeist.
Yes, I agree.
So it's
2-for-1 by MGM.
Yeah,
so.
But as far as the final night, this one was a little bit different for me, because, you know, knowing so many people, especially who were involved with Vamp and Killer Clowns, but also knowing some people in Chucky. I mean, I've known, you know, going to this event so much, and especially not just covering it for Thrill Geek, but used to be I would just, you know, take so many pictures of everybody, because I knew, you know, new scare actors and new people who worked for Universal. I've gotten to know and become friends with a lot of people. This year was a little bit, and the ending was a little bit more emotional for me, because just to see, you know, my friends, you know, you know, do so well and have so much success this year, this was a little bit more emotional. Not that last year wasn't super emotional at the end there, but this year was a little bit different, and definitely, you know, I'm probably from now on gonna end in the scare zones, because I mean it's neat to see to see it end that way, because it's a lot more, you know, if you more personal to me, being able to sort of end your night.
I just felt like for Vamp 85, if they would play Cruel Summer, that would have been like the perfect send off song at the end. So,
well, I've almost always wanted the final Halloween Horror Nights at the, you know, maybe around, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes after the park closed, but people are still streaming out, or after the last house empties. Which, God knows, I would love to find out what time Stranger Things ended last night.
Oh God,
I almost would have loved like as it ends, you know, the light. I've been there when the lights have flipped back on, like the normal lights come on. Mm-hmm. But it would be almost funny if you just heard like a record scratch and it's like, and the music ends.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you hear a needle drop on a record again, and then the Christmas music starts.
Oh God! it's like Grinchmas or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
but you know, it's sad to see it in.
I would never set foot in Halloween Horror Nights again if that happened.
No, it'd be like the episode from Bob's Burgers, Lynn. It's only the day after Halloween.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, they were literally taking stuff down as we were leaving.
Yeah.
Maybe about
10-15 minutes after the final ball drop in Vamp 85, they already had the trucks out, loading up the trucks, taking down lights, and they weren't wasting any time.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, one of the things I saw behind the Screams tour, they had all the Christmas stuff staged and ready to go out. We all know they've already started decorating, you know, Grinchmas and Islands of Adventure, but I mean they had all the Christmas stuff for the studios staged and to immediately start. I mean, as soon as Halloween Horror, since they've gone so big into Christmas now, I mean, that's why Halloween Horror Nights has such a hard out now, because they literally have to tear Halloween Horror Nights down off the streets, because they immediately have to start putting Christmas decorations up.
Yep.
Okay, that's enough saying the word Christmas for this episode.
All right,
let's move on.
Let's get into the top scare zones for Halloween Horror Nights 28. So, as with any time we do lists, we always start at the bottom and go to the top. So we're going to start at number 6. I hope we're all in agreement on this. But for me, at least, the number, and we're saying six because we're counting Carnival of Curiosities, the Chainsaw Scare Zone, as a scare zone.
Okay.
Because Universal counts it as a scare zone.
Yep.
So six for me is The Harvest. Albeit for that scare zone location, they did a really good job this year.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's almost always home to the weakest scare zones. Usually, there have been some years that the scare zone in that area has actually been really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely a step up, I feel, over last year. Number one, because they actually felt like put some effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those scare actors, you know, they really work their butts off because they deal with the crowds more than anybody else does.
Yeah, that's like the main flow of like how you get to the park, so.
But I say it's an improvement over last year. Sorry, it's still at the bottom for me, but it is what it is.
I'm agree with too, because not like versus like last year, like Altars of Horror, where you say, hey, here's all the IPs and the houses represented, but I just felt like, you know, like, it was kind of cool, like, this year they put those fences up, and so, like, I feel like the scare actors were kind of, like, blended in a little more, and they can actually just, like, you know, scare and sneak up behind someone, versus, like, also the horror is like, hey, it's a selfie zone, and here's your pictures, and there you go, so.
Yeah. my number six was Harvest as well, but pretty much based off of what you were saying, Barry, and we've mentioned this before, it's at the bottom of our list, but it's a big improvement over what they've done the last couple of years. The few times where I caught myself just kind of, I stopped a few times in Harvest and watched the scare actors, and they were actually getting pretty good scares in there for what they had to work with, what little theming and what, you know, what they were given with. They actually did a pretty good job with what they were handed. So,
yeah, I agree.
Hats off to the scare actors in The Harvest for actually, you know, working hard and getting some good scares. Because I saw it. I saw a lot of the scares that they were getting. So
yeah, especially the ones I remember. I think it was my second night there. I thought I saw one scare actor. He was like, he was pushing the corner. He looked like he was so blended in well. I was like, I didn't know if that was like a person or that was like an object. So.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Number five, and I know some people this may irk, at least, but for me, number five was Twisted Tradition. It was definitely one I was more excited for going in, and set wise. Yeah, it's awesome to have the pumpkins again. But I almost feel like it was too soon to have the pumpkins again.
Yep.
The church. With facade thing was amazing, but it just, and some of the characters' costumes were really cool, but it just, I don't know if the central, because of the crowds, it just wasn't as good for me this year. I mean, it just
yeah, I think it was
very photogenic, but not, it just didn't have that feeling that I've had with that. And I've been, you know, fans of a lot of Central Park scare zones over the years, but this one, it just felt too much of a retread. So
I think my opinion, I have to agree with you. That's my number five too. But the thing is, I give the whole credit and appreciation for it, is that it's that it ties, because I'm a huge story kind of guy. I kind of appreciate how like it was tied into the whole like Universal like lore of like Cary, Ohio, and like, you know, I think I remember sending you like a whole like. Story like I've someone found on Twitter about explaining like what is tradition like is represented in the in Cary, Ohio, and like what does it represent for Universal.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think a big part of it had to do with, you know, when it got bottlenecked in there, they kicked the scare actors out into the front of the scare zone over by the church facade and stuff, and that really killed the mood of the scare zone.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so. I mean, I will say that the funny thing is one of the scare actors that did get me throughout the event was one of the high school kids, because I just wasn't paying attention, and he came up behind me with the clipboard, and mm-hmm. and actually made me jump.
But
I mean, it was a beautiful scare zone. It just, like I said, it felt too much of a retread of past things. I love the lore thing, and I love, you know, Cary, Ohio. You know, always usually shows up every year in Halloween Horror Night somewhere.
I think my favorite scare actor was that Tesco where they had like that pumpkin was like glowing up and he had like that green neon and everything. That was I actually thought was pretty cool. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. No, the costumes in there were really cool. They had some really cool costumes with the pumpkin heads and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The design was really cool. I just think this year with the insane crowds, it was just hard for them to get any kind of you know.
Mm-hmm.
For the scare actors to get any kind of rhythm going because they were all over the place with them crowds.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Number four. Barry, what's your number four?
Number four for me is Carnival of Curiosities. You know, it is a chain. You know, that it's pretty much become for a while now that Springfield area is the chainsaw scare zone.
Yeah.
And this year, after going back to clowns again last year, in the last 5 years, they've come up with some inventive chainsaw stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had the cheerleaders, we've had the geishas, we've had like the mm-hmm. orange is the new black female convicts. You know,
mm-hmm.
we've had some interesting stuff. I love the Carnival of Curiosities. It, you know, the fact that it sort of ties in a little bit to Carnival Graveyard, because one of the songs you do hear is an Ernest Lee mm-hmm. song. You know, and the fact I love the design of their costumes and the fact they're supposed to be, you know, members of like a carny freak show, and mm-hmm. you know, you got the bearded lady, you know, you got snake charmer, strong man. You know, they all had and the scare actors there really went into their characters.
Yeah, they went ham. I agree.
And they, each one had their own distinct personality, and I think that's what between that, the music in the scare zone, and also the new lighting they used this year for that scare zone.
Yeah,
really, really took the chainsaw. And I love the chainsaws. I can sit there in a chainsaw scare zone, you know, for like, you know, an hour and just watch them just you know, to this day it still blows my mind that people get scared by that stuff.
Clint, I remember what I think was that night. I remember when the chainsaws got me good. I was like, oh my god, you saw my reaction. I was like, jumped out of my freaking mind. So
yeah, no, they were really good.
It's funny because it's like chainsaws don't get me anymore.
Yeah, no.
Because I'm so numb to the sound of it.
Uh-huh.
That was my number four.
Mine was actually, and it was hard between these two. My number four was Chucky. It was hard for me to. I'll go ahead and say my number three, which were the chainsaws.
I went back and forth a lot on one. What was three and what was four between those two? Chucky's my number three. So,
I had a really hard time placing these two, but I think the chainsaws edged out Chucky just because of the creativity they had this year, like you mentioned, and the new lighting. And they were getting, you know, it's chainsaws. They're you know, there's still masses and masses of people that are terrified by those things. So I saw some of the greatest scares out of the scare zones come out of the chainsaws. So that alone kind of made me nudge out Chucky, but just barely. You know, Chucky, mm-hmm. I guess we'll go on here to our number three since we kind of mashed these two together and talk about Chucky. Chucky was an interesting scare zone. I think Chucky's shtick with the whole stage show got old for me quick. Like, I just started to ignore it pretty quick. Unless I was there with somebody that hadn't seen it, you know, I would stop and watch the Chucky show. But, you know, him harassing people, you know, and jabbing at people, I just got kind of over that quick. But that turned my focus to the scare actors, which at the beginning of Horror Nights, I was kind of ignoring because I was so into watching Chucky, the show, every time I walked through that scare zone. So my loss in interest of watching him made me turn my attention to the scare actors in Chucky, which were phenomenal. You know, between the Cabbage Patch doll and the big fat baby guy, you know, just there were so many good scare actors in that zone, and good scares too alongside it.
Yeah, I really felt that, like, you know, they got the scare actors actually. They got, once they got more comfortable into their characters, I feel like they really got better. And also once they learned more how to deal with the people, you know, the crowd that would gather around Chucky, and they would use him as a distraction and pick off people sometimes. So it's
I was very good for me. It was tough between Vamp and Chucky, but I have to honestly agree with you, what you got, because Vamp and Chucky both had a stage show, and, you know, but then again, when you see, like, the most, like, punchline comedy and the insults that Chucky's giving to you, it kind of feels like, is this like I'm watching, like, a stand-up comedy show, or I'm just waiting for, like, new jokes?
A bad stand-up comedy show.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much people comparing Chucky to Don Rickles, pretty much. He was like the Don
Rickles. Yeah, because it was like, where you from?
Yeah, he was like the Don Rickles. He was the Don Rickles of, like, of Horror Nights, and... You know, in Vamp 85, which, you know, we were talking to y'all a little before, is like you're hearing the same song over and over, but I kind of agree with you. Great casting, great scare actors, but I just felt like some of the comedy fell a little bit short for Chucky, and that's why I had to put in my top three, so.
Which is what Chucky is. Chucky's kind of that silly, over the top, you know. His movies have gone from a serious thriller horror film to silly, nonsensical humor.
Exactly.
Which, you know, it is what it is. But
So we, I'm going to ask for number two. My number two is Vamp 85. Ooh. What is everybody else's number two?
Yep, Vamp.
Like I said, this was hard for. Oh my god, this was a hard decision for me. Oh my goodness gracious.
Now I will say, going into the event, this to me was the most excited I was for, because I liked Vamp 55. And not that I wasn't excited for Killer Clowns, I was still like blown away that Killer Clowns was going to be a scare zone. But as far as like hype, I felt like Vamp was a lot more hype, and some aspects of it worked very well. Yeah. It was definitely a scare zone that suffered from the scare actors that were really good were really good, and some of the scare actors were a little bit lazy.
Yeah.
One of my issues with Vamp 2 was, and me and you, Barry, we kind of discussed this last night, was the lack of set design. I don't know what they could have done, it being a New Year's Eve theme, what kind of sets they could have done.
I mean, we definitely found out, I found out from one of the people in who was in charge of the area that there were supposed to be more sets. The whole band stage thing was supposed to be bigger. There were supposed to be more scare actors in Vamp. That's one of the reasons why they blocked off the street between Finnegan's and Blues Brothers, because there were supposed to be a lot more actors in Vamp. But for literally the reason, I think, is the break room they got assigned couldn't hold over a certain amount of people. They just were like, oh, well, we're not going to do it.
Was it because also probably think it was because of the budget, how much content went into like the budget?
I mean, it always seems like if there's budget cut anywhere every year, it seems like it's the scare zones
to get
the budget acts at the end.
I think for me, like, I have to agree with you.
They run out of time. But then you look at how many pieces Chucky had.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. And really, they were all... I could say the Operation one was the one that they could have just tossed out and not done.
Yeah,
I would have rather seen another piece in Vamp than that thing.
I just felt like there was some, like... I felt like there was some, like, I agree. Like, you know, say, for example, there was a ball drop. Maybe you could say, hey, you can shoot confetti out, make it more exciting, you know, or, like... Hey, you know, like, I know you're playing the Misfits at every time, saying that, like, you know, like, the guy dressed as, like, Run DMC is like, hey, it's Feeding Frenzy time. And I just felt that there was just like some kind of like variety that in some like content they could have like and like and give that little plussing of Vampire 5 in my opinion.
Well,
so,
the ball drop stage also overpowered the entire zone.
No, I agree.
Sound wise and just in general.
Yeah, you could hear way back in the park
and the MC talked too damn much.
Oh yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
It overpowered the rest of the zone. I mean, I realize it. You know, it's his job to do that, but he didn't have to talk. I really wish the direction would not have been to talk as much.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and it's just it's. You know, I still really liked it. And if it wasn't for the what was my favorite, it would probably be the number one, but.
No, here's a quick question. Did you like Vamp 85 or Vamp 55 better?
Vamp 55. Vamp 55 had more. I mean, there were storylines in Vamp 85.
Yeah, I agree.
When you had the scare actors who were pretty committed, they had their little bits that were in that if you hung out and you. I mean, we saw one. Closing night where the two victims, like, you know, one proposes marriage.
Yeah.
And then the other, two vamps pop out and, you know, feed on them. There were different little bits, little storylines that were going on, but nowhere near the way it was in 55.
I gotta say, I think everyone can come to agreement. Trisha, the news reporter and her cameraman, she was phenomenal. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, both Trishas were hilarious, and yeah. I mean, you know, there was a couple times, you know, I got interviewed by them, and
yeah, me
know,
too,
because I was wearing, you know, I was one of the lucky few who got the Vamp 85 shirt before it was taken off.
Yeah.
And so it was hilarious, because, I mean, she never broke character, and just, mm-hmm. like, you know, was asking, why are you supporting the vampires, and, you know,
yeah.
It's like,
My experience, sorry to be interrupted, but Ashley said, hey, I'm from New York, and I was explaining Lanson, and so I just said, I came out of nowhere and saw these vampires, and so I see blood and this chaos, and it's like, and it was like, and it was like, you know, I was with Chanel, who was Mindy with me, who went to the event, and it was like, she was about to do the houses, and she was like, hey, she's like, come interview, I was like, come over, she's like, no, I don't want to get interviewed, and it's like, but overall, she's just, it was a solid character, her never broke character, she was just, I think, a perfect addition to the event, so.
Yeah, I mean it was a good scare zone, but
yeah.
And then numero uno,
yep.
Killer clowns.
Clowns.
I mean, it was. They so nailed the look of the movie, the clowns, the color palette, and then just Yes, were there people? There were people who were terrified.
Yeah,
I mean, you could see it. It was always fun. The people who had obviously, you know, serious phobia to clowns, mm-hmm. would just go running through there. But man, as the event went along, the scare actors, the clowns, just, I mean, they all started to have their own unique personalities.
Yeah,
and it was in just spending so much time in that zone, no. to the point that there was a certain clowns who recognized me.
Yeah,
you know, and there especially one who always recognized me and would always, like, you know, give me the I'm watching you thing, and I loved it, and like I said, I think it also helped the fact, you know, meeting some of the creative people behind, mm-hmm. the movie. I mean, it just sort of gave that zone a different feel that I've never had, really, and I feel like in the 13 years I've been going there, probably not since the first Purge scare zone, when I knew so many people who were involved, mm-hmm. in that I hung out that much time in a scare zone. So
yeah, there's just nights where, I mean, not even last night, you know, where we just kind of hung out. There were several nights before that where I would just hang out in Killer Clowns and Vamp 2, mm-hmm. and just kind of hang out and take the scare zones in and watch the insanity ensue. But more so with Killer Clowns, because like Barry mentioned, you could, when you got the people going through there that were legit terrified of clowns, mm-hmm. And the clowns picked up on that, they would chase them, and it was fantastic. So and everything else about that scare zone.
And like, even I mean, even the story of the little girl who her parents I guess what they didn't have a babysitter one night or something, and they had tickets. I forgot what the full story is. So they had to bring her. And she just, like, I mean, it's little, like, what, toddler. I mean, she's, I think she's, what, two or something?
And that was the night John was there, right?
Well, I think she had been there before, but this little girl, like, totally fell in love with these big, giant clowns. And the scare actors were all, every time she would come, they were so sweet to her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, it's a little, I know a lot of people rant and rave about people bringing kids. to Halloween Horror Nights, but I will say it depends on the situation.
I agree.
And but those, that little girl like adored those clowns.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say it, but for me, I think you watched Killer Clowns actually before you went to Horror Nights, and to be perfectly honest with you, I never even heard Killer Clowns. I'm like, so like, according to me, I was like, I had to do my research, like, so what's the obsession with this movie?
Yeah.
And then I realized, and after going like for two nights, and I opened my eyes, I'm like, I can see why this is represented as a cult classic, and why people so much treasure this movie to death. And that theme song performed by the Dickies is so addicting that I swear to God, I have it on my SoundCloud playlist because it's just that catchy of a theme song. Like,
you mean you didn't get enough of it when you were there?
No, I was trying to absorb as much as I can, and not to mention I caught a dance party while I was there, and I was dancing with Shorty and the DeRozzi brothers, and it was and the funny thing is I was actually talking to the DeRozzi brother, and I asked him like, "Are do you guys serve Dole Whip?" And he's like, and he caught my reference, like, "Oh, you mean from Disneyland?" So I'm like, I can't believe I just made a Disney reference in the middle of a obscure.
But I mean, and we didn't even talk about the dance party. This is what always makes the zone so interesting. Every day, this was something the scare actors came up about 2 weeks into the event, and then went to creative and got it approved.
Wow!
And you know, in each cast in their last set of the night, you know, when the Dickies theme song comes on, they have a dance party, and it's one of the most coolest things I've ever seen in a scare zone.
I think it was a better dance party than Disney, no offense.
Yeah, I mean, and it was really, really neat to be there for the final night for their final ones, and it's little things like that always makes the scare zones interesting. Some of the most, and even I'm sure I know, like Blake and Mike will agree, some of the most interesting things that have happened in the scare zones sometimes come from the scare actors themselves.
I agree.
Yeah.
So that's our scare zones for.
All right, we can't take 45 minutes on haunted houses here, so let's get to it. No. I think it might be better for us to go individually.
Yeah,
and just fire down the list. So,
you want me to kick it off?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Number 10, shock, surprise, Horrors of Blumhouse. Albeit, I will say that even though twice going through that house, someone got me. which, you know, for those of you who know me, is a rare thing that happens when anybody gets me. Number 9, Trick or Treat. I think it's just because the fact that it was a scare zone last year, just it didn't click with me as much. Albeit, it's a beautiful house. They really put some effort into it, and it's got a couple of good scares in it. But you know, it just wasn't as good to me. Number 8, Halloween 4. Unfortunately, you know, the first two Halloween houses were pretty freaking amazing. 4 is not exactly the greatest source material. It just came down to, after, you know, the other two Halloween houses, 4 just became, you know, it's just Michael Myers, because there's just so much, there's no real memorable stuff in that movie. Number 7, you know, Seeds of Extinction. I know this house has been one of the most divisive houses in the entire event. I mean, some people have this at the top of their list. Some people have it at the bottom. I will say, for the longest time, it was near the bottom. It moved up a little bit. You know, but it's a beautiful house. The set design they put into that thing is nuts. Mm-hmm. But just having the basically the same scare over and over and over again just didn't really do much for me. Pretty much now 3 through 6, any of these could have been in any order. it really came to that. It's any of these could have been in any order, but I'm going to say number 6, Stranger Things. It's the house I got to go through the least. I did get to go through it, I think 5 times, which I know for many people is more than they ever got to go through it. Most people were lucky to get through it once.
There's people listening to this going, now, hey, we went through it once and we waited 140 minutes for it.
Yeah.
140 minutes, oh my God.
But amazing set design. Like, I mean, almost you know, photo accurate to the first season of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but as we all knew, the biggest, you know, there's a ton of Demogorgons in there because it's really the only monster in the first season. There's some inventive scares. The casting was probably some of the best casting I've ever seen in an IP house.
I agree.
But it didn't click as much. It's like I said, it could have been anywhere between 3 through 6, but for me, it's number 6. I will say this, if all we are expecting season 2 next year, that house to me has a huge potential because of just the sheer mm-hmm. number of monsters that are in that season.
I agree.
And season 2 is more horror.
Mm-hmm.
So, number 5 is Scary Tales. One of the best facades they've ever created. And in this case, actually created a facade that does something.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I loved Dead Waters last year, the facade did nothing. This facade mm-hmm. does something and sets up the story that you're about to go through. Great sets in that house. I mean, we're all going to remember It's So Yummy in My Tummy.
Oh my God, I couldn't hear that nonstop.
Forever. It's going to be one of those lines, how a Horror Nights lines that sticks with everybody for mm-hmm. a long time.
So yummy in my tummy.
Yeah. Or was it Gretel? Was it tastes like candy?
Yeah. Exactly.
I think the only reason it suffered a little bit is I feel like due to casting problems, because there was a lot of times I went there and there was a lot of missing scares.
Mm-hmm.
But design, and of course, the bear was back. We all love
HHN bear.
We all love the HHN bear, and the bear made, you know, was back. So, baby bear and papa bear.
Yes.
So, Scary Tales was number 5. Number 4, Slaughter Cinema. And albeit it was a lot, this was definitely higher at the beginning. This was another one that depended on which cast you got. Mm-hmm. Cause like one of my favorites, parts of the house, Shitty's Kids.
Yep.
One cast did not have the best thing about it, which was like the guy in the bear costume fighting with the kid.
Swamp Yeti got me the most in that scene.
Yeah. I mean, it really, that was another one. One cast was definitely better than the other. But it's Slaughter Cinema to me is one of the most creative houses they've ever come up with.
Come
up with the idea of it's B movies, but no, we're not. You know, when they first announced it, we sort of thought, oh, there'll be one section that's this movie, one section that's that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not that poster. Trailer, movie trailer guy set up, scene, poster, mm-hmm. you know, each specific area was a different movie.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing, and just so creative. One of the most creative things, it would be the most creative thing Charles Gray came up with this year if it mm-hmm. wasn't for another house.
I love how he gets eaten by Shitty's Kids in the Cary, Ohio, like drive-in. So
yeah, and it's another Cary, Ohio tar. Number 3 for me was Carnival Graveyard, and like I said, 3 through 6, these could have been in any order, but the design is amazing. It's one of the first houses where you actually went around in and around pieces that you could see from the other side. You know, it's they put a lot of creativity. They, like they jokingly said, they basically emptied out the warehouse and put almost everything in there.
Yep.
each the characters had, you know the all the characters in the house had backstories that you could figure out or learn about. Just a fun house with some really creative stuff in it, and like I said, 3 through 6 could have been in any order. Mm-hmm. Number 2, Dead Exposure. A very well done sequel to one of my favorite Halloween Horror Nights houses. Those of you who've listened before know that I don't get scared that often, but if you want to scare me, you mess with my eyes. You screw with my irises and make me basically blind in a maze. And that will give me, it may not jump scare me, but it will give me a sense of dread. And I can tell you, especially going through that house when it's daylight outside, I would get a sense of dread in that house because you are blind.
You can't see a darn thing.
You cannot see a thing. And the scare actors in there got so good of using the blackout spots to literally the lights go out and then they pop on and there's like a hand in front of your face.
Yeah,
or they pop out, they time the pop out at the right time. I mean, it's definitely a house that it's definitely one of my favorite houses. Original houses they've done, and some of my past favorite ones were the Dead Exposure, and then also that was really one of the first uses that where they did stuff like that with messing with your eye, using lighting to strobes to mess with your irises.
Yeah.
And really, you know, use the dark. Number 1, to no surprise,
the goat, the beast,
the goat
is Poltergeist, which to me in the 13 years I've been going is hands down the best IP house they've ever created. From the beginning to end, it is an amazing house. And we've had this is the third year in a row, really, we've had a very major horror film be adapted with The Shining and The Exorcist over the previous 2 years.
The triple whammy.
And the other two, why I felt each had their faults, this one, they so nailed it. Just, and really, I think, by the fact that they pretty much started the house at the end of the movie, and that whole thing of you walking in through the pool and up through the burial ground into the house was just brilliant. And I mean, just you walk around the corner into that soundstage and you're walking into a storm and it's lightning and it's raining, and it's not just like a light mist.
Yeah,
it's like storming in there, and there's wind blowing, and it's just
you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me a little bit of the Twister side of Attraction back in the day, a little bit with all the wind and everything.
Yeah,
and then
you go through the burial ground, and especially when you went into the house during the daylight, is another one in the beginning
you
of
son
you
son of a bitch.
you had stuff by the bodies. Why?
You were like blind in that first part of the house. And then just the fact, the way they did you going into the light and going into the spirit realm, and just the different the puppets and the use of the clown and the giant mantis character. Mm-hmm. Just so well done. You know, a perfect adaptation to what for many people is that over the years is and a lot of people's it's their first horror film, and I think that's why as hyped as Stranger Things was, this was the house that I mean there were nights that wait for Poltergeist was longer than Stranger Things. It's definitely the one, once the word really got out about that house, its weights went through the roof. So that's my top 10. Like I said, this was one of the hardest years, because to me, even though horror was a Blumhouse, is at 10, there was no crap house this year, which I feel like this is the second year in a row where all the houses had their good points. There wasn't, used to be there was always the one house that was just a complete turd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the last 2 years, every house has had their good and, has been at least good. So that's my top 10.
Cool. I'm going to quick power through mine here because a lot of the ones you touched on, a lot of the ones you went through, my thoughts and opinions were kind of the same, but if there's anything different, I'll mention it as I'm going down my list. Number 10, Blumhouse. Number 9 for me was Halloween. I couldn't get into this house this year versus years past Halloween houses, which were amazing. This year it just didn't do it for me for some reason. And then the line for that house got insane, and I really didn't get to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Me and Barry were probably head on with saying it was probably due to the film coming out. It got super busy.
It was nuts how much busier mm-hmm. that house got.
I mean, that whole queue line between Shrek and down to Mel's, that thing got insane. So unfortunately, I didn't get to go through that house many more times the last probably 2 weeks of Horror Nights. I didn't go through that house. I do it when me and Cheryl were there. But yeah, it just I just couldn't get into that house. Number 8, this may be surprising to some, is Stranger Things. While the set design was amazing, everything you said was spot on, Barry, but the Demogorgons just got old quick, and I just couldn't feel that. I've always based my decisions, and it, like you said too, it's been so hard this year. I had some solid run through Stranger Things, and then some that were just kind of, you know. But my biggest thing with a haunted house is scares, and the scares just weren't there for Stranger Things for me. But not to say that I didn't see some good scares with the Demogorgons in there and all that stuff. But I didn't see it this year with it. But all that aside, if I made a list compiled of set design and casting, Stranger Things would probably be number one, because all the things you said, Barry, about the casting and the set design was incredible about that house. But it just didn't do it for me as far as scares. And the house started off pretty solid, like when you're in the living room. And when you started going into the upside down, it just kind of went downhill for me. Like the people shooting the guns and stuff, that just it just didn't do it for me. And you know, them coming out with their masks on, the lights on their face, and just it was weird. But not needless to say, it was a cool house. I liked it. Just me ranking it, I had to put it that low because it just wasn't the scare yeah. factor wasn't there for me, which is a big consideration for me when I do these top 10 lists, which I don't enjoy doing because they're so hard. Number 7 was Trick or Treat. I do agree with you that it was a little too late for them to do a house within a year, with the scare zone being last year. But I think pretty much everything you mentioned about it being... the design was really good. Some of the set scenes in that house were really good. There were some good scares with Sam in there. But again, I think this similar along the lines of Stranger Things. The second half of this house got kind of weak for me when the slate quarry and the scene with the vampire chicks. The first,
you know, especially the slate quarry stuff, is as neat as it was, and it was well done. There should have been more scare actors.
Yeah, I think just like Stranger Things, this house went downhill quick towards the second half of the house. That's why it's kind of low on my list, because it just didn't the ending of that house just didn't do too much for me. But I love the beginning when you're going through the house. And Sam's kind of popping out at you everywhere. There was one cast, and I could tell the differences between the cast. There was one cast that was really good. I don't know whether it was A or B or whatever. But there was one cast where the Sams were really good. excuse me. Number 6, Carnival Graveyard was my number 6. I like this house. The set design was amazing. I just found the house to be really intense. If I had to, again, if I had to do another list of top intense, like the intensity of houses, this house was really intense to me. And again, the scares weren't really there for me a whole lot with this house.
Yeah,
the run-throughs that I had on it. But not to say that I didn't enjoy the house, the set design. Some of the interactions with some of the characters in the house were really interesting. I got to sneeze and it won't come out. my allergies have been kicking my butt today. But number five for me was Scary Tales. And I think kind of like what you said, Barry, 4, 5, and 6 here for me could have swapped in and out because I had good and bad runs with these ones. Scary Tales being one of them. And I do agree with you saying that I had several runs. I think Scary Tales would be higher on my list, but I had several runs through that house where there were a lot of empty spots.
Yeah, I don't think any run was ever, as much as I like that house, I don't think any run was ever as good as the first one we had on the opening night.
It seemed like every run through I would go through that house, either it would start off really strong and then there'd be like a good 10-15 seconds of just awkward silence. But I liked the house. The facade was amazing with the witch. When the house was chugging along and it was going good, it was an amazing house. But it seemed like every run through on that house, there would be some point in the house where it just stopped. And that kind of sucked for me because I really loved that house. It seemed like every time, just somewhere in the house, it would just, there'd be no scare actors, and it just got awkward. That's number five for me. Number four was Seeds. This was a house that was kind of all over the place for me. But the more I went through it towards the end of the event, because it was always the one that I didn't like the walk back there.
Nobody did.
But it was always the house that had the shorter waits towards, you know, even in the peak of the night, in the heat of the night when everything was, you know, 90 minutes, you could always catch Seeds and it'd be 30, 45 minutes. So I went through that house many, many times, especially with my sisters who loved that house. And it slowly grew on me more and more towards the end of the event, which is why I have it up so high. And there was some kind of the hand puppet things were kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
There were a few that were really clever, the little hand puppet plant things. There were a few that the scare actors that did that got kind of clever with it. But my passion for that house really started to grow a little bit more when I started to kind of take in the scenery a little bit more and look around and look at things, because the detail of that house is really impressive. I didn't do that at first. I was just kind of looking, you know, at the scare actors. And that's the other thing with that house too. With Seeds, it's so based on those scare actors being perfectly still. I've been going to Halloween Horror Nights for 20 plus years, and if your character's based on holding still and not being seen, I'm going to see you.
Yeah.
And that was one of my biggest issues with Seeds of Extinction, were these guys covered in these plant materials.
And the ghillie suits.
I could see them. If they did one slight movement, it would ruin the whole thing for me. And that bugged me to no end, because I'd be looking and I'd see one of the guys move and I'd be like, oh, that's it. You're right there. There you are. this was a house that kind of grew on me and made it up higher on my list as the event went on. But again, 4, 5, and 6, Seeds, number 4, Scary Tales 5, and Carnival 6. I think those three could really swap at any point throughout the event. So those three were kind of hard. 3 for me was Slaughter Cinema. I love this house. I think I don't even have anything to say. Pretty much you nailed you nailed it on the head, Barry, with what you were saying about just the creativity into it, the characters, the amount of work that went into that house, coming up with all those individual movies and cramming them in that house, and it flows so good too. Mm-hmm. That's one thing about that house is that they were able to cram all those B horror movies into one house, but it's not overwhelming. It's a pleasant experience going through all them different movies and experiencing experiencing them each in their own unique way. Number three was Slaughter. And number two was Dead Exposure. This was another house that I think started off kind of, I would say, if I was doing a top 10 list, the whole event started off kind of low. Because I really didn't get through Dead Exposure a whole lot at the beginning of the event. But the last few weeks, I had a lot of run-throughs, and it shot up my list quick. And I think part of it was due to the scare actors, and you mentioned this, Barry. They really started to learn the lighting in that house and moving with the lights turning off and the black light, and that house is 100% based on that. And I think the scare actors started to get wind of it and started really to learn it. And there were a few times where I actually got godded, if you want to say, in that house. And again, it doesn't happen to me a whole lot because, like I said, you know, me, I'm numb to Halloween Horror Nights. So when I get scared or I get, you know, even just a little, I make sure to recognize the scare actors because it doesn't happen a whole lot with me.
Clint, don't just like interrupt you for a little. Did you feel like your experience was a little more different when they were pulsing the lines or no?
With Dead Exposure, I think it helped with that when. Mm-hmm. I did Dead Exposure. I got the very end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
What else did
You and I have the opposite answer on that one. I think pulsing actually made the experience less good for Dead Exposure.
Yeah.
Because to me, part of the thing is Dead Exposure, it's all about the lighting. And to me, the pulsing made it even harder for you to be in the right place at the right time. Whereas with the conga line for that one, it seemed they often had it just didn't feel as good. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing if we were going through there by ourselves.
Right.
It was just me and him and you know, but with the pulsing, it just, I felt like you didn't get hit as much because, the other problem with the pulsing is you were moving faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the good thing sometimes about the conga line is you slow down. Or if you're like me, you purposely slow down.
Yeah. I think, you know, I can kind of agree with Barry on it.
But I will say I went conga, I got to do pulsing through Stranger Things, and that was way better.
Yeah, and I could totally see that. I didn't get to do Stranger Things when it was on that Tuesday.
Yeah, when it was. Because we were pulsed through Stranger Things, we were pulsed through Dead Exposure,
and I got it on Scary Tales too.
Yeah. So it worked better in some houses.
Yeah.
But some houses it didn't. You know, it didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and we experienced pulsing at Busch Gardens because they still do that when it's slower.
Yeah.
And on Insomniac, at least the first time through, it worked really well. I mean, we nailed every single scare, and it was just so good, and then the second time it sort of got ruined by a couple of idiots in front of us. but pulsing works in some houses, and in some, just the way Universal designs their houses, it felt like it didn't do as well in others. And I've experienced pulsing in other times at Horror Nights, back when you used to have a lot more slower nights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's But for me, Dead Exposure, it didn't really make that much of a difference. But
and do I really need to say my number one?
What was that?
I wonder what it was, Clint.
Moving on. No.
No.
I didn't have a bad run through Poltergeist. Every single time I went through that house, it was just the most intense, insane experience I've had. Not ever at Halloween Horror Nights, but in a while. And I got to the point with Poltergeist where I was trying to find a reason to not like the house. And the only thing I could come up with was the part towards the end where those glow-in-the-dark mask things, people run out at you. That part was kind of cheesy. But even that was good at some points. There were some that did it pretty good when they had to run out with those things they were holding that looked like faces, like spirits or whatever they were supposed to be.
Well, I know the one of the interesting things learning on Behind the Screams is they wanted that room to be different than what they've done in the past, where normally you have a bunch of mannequins, but then you have somebody who's a real person. Mm-hmm. So they purposely went out of the way to have, you know, the mannequins were like the spirits of some of the dead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you expecting that one of them was going to move and come to life, instead, you know, they were in those cloaks where they basically had the mask.
Yeah.
And they just basically pulled back the sheet and came out to give you a different type of scare.
Okay, I can kind of see that.
Instead of what in Cult of the Beast Baby.
Yeah.
You had all the figures, and then you had, depending on, you had one or two that came at you.
And that was the gimmick that I figured that they were going for in that room. But even that, there were times where the scare actors weren't doing, I think, what they were supposed to. Yeah. Like you said, the way that room was designed. But then I saw them nail it some other nights. But no, Poltergeist was just insane for me. Every time I went through that house, just it delivered from beginning to end. And just a different... I mean, the beginning from you starting in the pool, going through the house, and the weird abstractness of the end of the house, I love that house, and I'm going to miss it dearly. Miss awesome. It very, very much.
All right, Byron, you got 3.5 minutes.
Yeah. Go, you're on the clock.
Okay, so even though I was there for like the first two nights, I'll rapid fire real quick. 10 was Horrors of Blumhouse, even though I didn't get to do this one, sadly I was there, but because I felt like Purge was the constant, it was like the Walking Dead of HHN, and I respect for the IP what it was, but I just felt like not really big fan of the franchise, and was just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Number 9 was, this was a tough for me. I would say number 9, I would say definitely would be Halloween 4 of Michael Myers, because just people were hyping up the movie, the 2018, I guess they were getting in the spirit, and the lines were too much, but I just felt like there was just Michael Myers, it was just oversaturated in front of you, like over and over, so... appreciate for what the movie was, but it was not for me.
It wasn't. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. I think my issue with that house is I have no issue with several Michael Myers coming out at me, because they've all done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think my issue with this one, with the Halloween 4 house, was it wasn't done well.
Yeah, it was not an adapt.
It was just something was weird about the way I don't know. It was just weird for me.
Personally, in my opinion, I felt like Hollywood was a little more better than Orlando's, in my honest opinion. So
I never saw theirs.
Yeah. So what was that? I'm at what, number
eight?
Number eight. Okay. So number eight for me. Yeah. We wanted to do. Me and Chanel were like tempted to do, but we're doing Season Exposure, Season Extinction. As much as we wanted to do this house, but it was just way too far in the back, and we were dead tired that night. From the numerous videos and the walkthroughs I've seen for this house, was that I appreciate for what it was in terms of like the, you know, the scare actors being blended so well. I thought the story, and because I know Clint probably just mean the story was I found it interesting, even though I felt it was a little bit lacking a little bit. But I just felt like some of the cues and some of the triggers from this character just felt a little bit off, in my opinion. But it was kind of cool also to see some of the Easter eggs, like Jack and Eddie sunglasses hot and everything. I thought that was pretty cool. But I just felt like, in terms of like the scares, was a bit off. So number 7 for me, I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but... I had to put Stranger Things on my bottom of my list because I feel like it's everyone's, whoever has seen the show, I appreciate you. I appreciate the show, what it is. I respect your honest opinion about it and how it's important to our pop culture and our society. But I just felt like it was just more about the scenic and the core, and it was like less about the scares. And even though the Demogorgons were both live actors and puppets, but I just felt like it was just more like appreciating for me in terms of like set design and scenery, and it was just like a mere replica of the show in season one, which hopefully if it does come next year for season two, it'll be focusing more on the horror elements and then scenic design, in my opinion. So
yeah,
what was number? What was I'm still trying to lose track. I'm not trying to lose track here. Number six.
Yeah.
Number six for me, you'd be surprised for me, would be Trick or Treat. Because this is the movie as much I'm a really big fan of. I did this house twice when I was there. I actually got sprayed by the water in the quarry scene, to be honest with you. Sam actually got me good a couple of times, and also Mr. Creed got me good as well, and the Swamp Children got me good as well. Even Mr. Krieg, who was actually, if you notice, he actually was holding, that was actually a Sam, that was actually a puppet. He actually got me a good couple as well, and it's not because I'm just a big fan of the movie, and Michael Dougherty, who actually did this movie. It's just, even though the movie was, huge it is, I mean, it's a cult classic, but I have to agree with Barry on the, I felt like towards the second act, they could have used a little more tweaking a little bit. So,
yeah.
But the thing is, for me, I got some really good scares, though, in my opinion. Number five, number five, and this is the one that number five, I'm trying to remember, before I contradict myself. Number five would definitely have to be, like I said, Slaughter Cinema. Because Slaughter Cinema, I agree with you guys. It's even though I feel like the set designs was perfect, the trailers were like announcing for the posters were like, here's like Cult of Beast Baby and Shady's Kids and Amazon Cannibals from Planet Hell, but I just felt like there was just some, I don't know, I kind of had some, I think for the first night I had like a bad run. Because I think they were rushing the house a little bit,
yeah.
because of the conga line, so that's where I kind of had a bad experience. But the second night, though, I did have a little more of improvement because I felt like it was just, like, got the more scares. I mean, for example, like, Hold the Beast Baby, that got me pretty good. So that's where I was at for number five for me. Number
Baby's
four?
Baby's first words.
Yeah.
Kill!
number four?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay,
four.
Yeah, so... So number four for me, definitely would have to be, number four for me would have to be, like I said, Scary Tales. Even though I was not, like I said, I've been a fan of Horror Nights since 2011, so I'm kind of like, still kind of new into the event, because I know, Clint, you're the veteran of the event.
You're a noob. What the hell do I have you on this podcast for? Noob. Get off here.
Yeah, no, because Lady Luck was my first icon that I got into, but I just felt like, so I was not around for the previous Scary Tales, even though I didn't, but after doing my research and seeing, the history of Horror Nights and how many times this house has been done, like I said, great facade, that witch was amazing, I mean, do you think this facade was a little more bigger than Dead Exposure Guys, or no?
The what?
Dead
Waters?
Yeah, Dead Waters, yeah, I think you said Dead Waters.
It is definitely a three-story tall facade.
Yeah, three-story, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, the story was excellent, especially, it's so yummy in my tummy, and it's like, oh my god, I couldn't get that in my head when I got back home, and it just stuck with me. But it just made me appreciate, the whole, the dark, fairy tales, especially with the witch and how much she's praised, and especially in the previous houses where they were done in the previous years of the event. I felt like, in terms of story, because for me, I'm all about the story and the details, so that's why I think I I see things a little bit different when doing house. Even though I like being scared too, but I'm more about the story and details and things I want to know. So it's like, oh, I didn't know about this. But it was actually pretty cool. Number three, Carnival Graveyard. Like I said, this is, as you guys said, this is Universal, what they did with the creative team. They literally just depleted their entire warehouse and just dropped into one house. So, like I said, I gotta say, I did this house twice, went two times I was there. I think I never didn't have a bad run, but it was just like, I was so paying attention to all the details that they threw from, for example, they had the Dueling Dragon side there from Isles of Adventure, which shall be rest in peace, by the way. See Jack the Clown, we said a little bit about the Usher. It's just, and, I feel like even though, because I had some friends in that house too, and I like to, support what they did, and, for example, Buster, by the way, shout out to Jeremy, listen to this, by the way. He got me a good couple times too. It's just understanding, how massive, how all these props and everything that they put in and everything. So,
yeah.
Number two, definitely has to be Dead Exposure. Unfortunately, like I said, I'm sorry, guys. This is the one I didn't get a chance to do E2. I feel so bad. But like I said, again, but just judging off from your guys' experience, this house was definitely just screws with your sight. I mean, I just felt like this house was going to a high intense strobe light EDM festival and just messing with your face, or seeing from the subway to the Paris catacombs and all the undead zombies coming from you're just literally just being your distorted. And I think that's what I think Charles Gray, when they created the creative team, said. It's just this house just screws with you. I mean, I was not around again. I'm sorry. I know I'm the noob. I was not around for the original Dead Exposure, but I saw a video before coming down for it, and it was just amazing. And I think it was just probably the strongest concept that did. And it was really cool to see the ties with the whole 80s. The whole theme of the 80s and being Paris and everything. So
yeah,
and no surprise for number one, I have the green. This house, before the podcast end, this house is now officially clean. Poltergeist. This movie, I had to agree with you. I had to tell you guys, I hadn't seen a very long time, but for some reason there was a little part in my heart that I felt terrible for little Carol Ann. She just gets thrown into portal after portal, and her family's got to go rescue her. But in terms of the house, though, I mean, like I said, your guys were this house was chilly, cold, raining. I thought I had to bring my own poncho into the house because I thought it was gonna get wet inside the house. But it's just, God, the execution, like I said. But the thing I think I appreciate about this house is that they evolved this house from the ending of the movie. And I don't remember any IP house being adapted where you're continuing a story, not say for example Poltergeist 2, because that doesn't they didn't do that, but it's just now based on the original film. It's just they evolved the story, and it's just, and that's a very harsh concept, because I remember it was while listening to a podcast during the Universal Orlando AP Q&A, and I think someone asked him saying, is it really that because of just evolved the story? And I think it really is, because, I mean, for a movie that's being, that's credited by, Steven Spielberg, it's a Toby Hooper movie that directed this movie. But I just felt like the execution was flawless. There were some things that were being added and removed, because I heard the clown was removed and added back in, because I felt like some guests were toying a little bit and they should not be doing that, but...
Yeah, overall, he came back eventually.
He came back. But I just felt like the clown got me really good. Seeing the freelings, just getting to me. The puppets were amazing, but for the mantis, I mean, and like I said, for me and my honest opinion, this was a perfect mirror replica image of Poltergeist, in my opinion. So,
cool.
Yep.
I want the dirt smell at the beginning of the house, yeah, as a candle. Yankee Candle. Somebody, please get on that.
Can we have like a dirt smell or the rain smell from Poltergeist and just smell there like almost
Poltergeist
like
storm smell?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yankee Anything. Candle. Yankee Candle, or just hit up Quinberry and then just let him know you guys we want Poltergeist candle. So
with that, that is the end of Halloween Horror Nights 28 for this year. Let the speculation begin for 29.
Which it already has.
Which it already has.
Which I'm going to 100% bet you is going to be a Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah, we're not done with it yet. Me and the wife were on episode 9. We got one more to go. But I would like to see that come. At first I was like, I don't see it. But now that I'm almost done with the season, I'm keeping it spoiler free here. I could see it. I could see it doing as a house. I think it'd be really cool. So, but there's this year was such a great event. There's so many fun things happened this year, from our first media event to our interview with Blake. Patrick, thank you.
Patrick.
I always get those two mixed up for some reason.
Patrick Braylard.
Yeah. I think because I interact with him a lot on Twitter. Just our interview with Patrick during the podcast thing. It was such a fun year this year, and just one of the more memorable Halloween Horror Nights I've had in a while. So,
do you feel like as the whole 80s theme like paid off this year or no?
I think it did. To me, it definitely did, because it being a child of the 80s, it really gave me
just giving that nostalgia. Yeah,
the nostalgia, and I think I'm going to paraphrase it. And, you know, as usual, the day after Halloween Horror Nights, and Mike Aiello tweets a lot of stuff about it, and they really emphasize the Halloween and the Halloween Horror Nights this year.
Yeah,
and it really had that feel to it, and the 80s vibe really to me helped it, and it's definitely, out of the 13 years I've gone, it's hands down my favorite one so far. And whether that's me looking through nostalgia glasses, I don't know, but I was there, even though I didn't go for a week, I was there more nights than I've ever been before, and I had an absolute blast.
I had a blast. I mean, like I said, even though I'm the newcomer here, I've been a fan of the event since 2011, and I didn't come till 2016, but then again, I was scared at first, and I was on, like, here I am today. This event is probably, in my opinion, the best thing ever, like, created for a Halloween theme park haunt ever, in my opinion. So
yeah, and I mean, we didn't even bring up, I know everybody had their own opinions, but it's like Academy of Villains, they stepped up their game this
year.
They had a huge thing that they had to do is go into that Fear Factor stage, and
they brought their A game every single show.
They definitely brought their A game.
For me, not going too long, but I've been a fan of them since I was 13 when they were America's Got Talent. They're ever since they went from Not Scary Farm now to here to Universal Studios Hollywood, now here to Orlando. What they do and what Chris and Crystal Phoenix, what they do for that studio is just mind-boggling, what they do and how they bring the heat every single show.
I'm not a huge dance show person. I could think of 1,000 other things I'd want to do and sit and watch a bunch of people doing dance moves. But like I said earlier on Twitter, you sit down and you watch these guys, you watch Academy of Villains, and the energy that they put into every show, it sucks you in, and if it wasn't for their passion, I would have zero interest in watching the show. But watching them with the amount of passion that they put into, and not just, you know, the main people in the show, every single dancer in that show puts in 100%, 110%. And I think that's what kept me coming back and wanting to see it a couple more times. I mean,
I definitely think they got better as the event went along.
Yeah.
Once they got more of a feel for playing and with that kind of audience and in that theater, I felt the show got better. And
it's they're theatrical. They know what they're doing. They plan this way in advance and everything. I mean, personally, I know you guys agree with me that I felt bad because of the hurricane last year. So their set got cut back last year. But this year it was a whole new level. They just cranked over like way over 10. So,
yeah,
Our only negative, and we've probably said this before, is especially with the crowds they had this year.
Yeah,
they need to have two shows at this event.
I agree. You know, I agree. They definitely need to.
They got to have two shows.
They need
to pull. They got to pull more people off the walkways.
Mm-hmm.
Because it got really bad at different points during this year.
Yeah,
especially
social media. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Alrighty,
but that's it. We got one more thing. Barry teased something last week that
I sort of dropped something on Clint without telling him last week.
Well, you've been teasing this for me for about a month, it seems like.
Yeah, so
so go ahead and spill the beans.
Yeah, we sort of teased out there that we Thrill Geek's going somewhere it's never been before in December, and myself and you know, those of you who know Sin, who's now my wife, you've seen her a lot on our social media and in some of our videos. We're going to Tokyo in December.
Woo!
So, so Thrill Geek will be at Tokyo Disneyland and Tokyo Disney Sea. And we will also, we're basically spending the week in Tokyo, and we'll be hitting up a couple of the other attraction type things like Joyopolis. And going by Tokyo Dome City to ride Thunder Dolphin. But our main emphasis for, especially Thrill Geek coverage, is we will be at Tokyo Disneyland for 3.5 days. And
I will be in Barry's suitcase.
Yeah.
As a carry-on.
And Barry will get to ride a Haunted Mansion before Clint does. So,
I'm so curious about
It will be Haunted Mansion Holiday.
Curious about your thoughts about Journey to the Center of the Earth. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I am excited to finally get, in many people's eyes, those two parks are the two best Disney parks in the
Agreed.
World.
Hands down.
And I'm excited to experience Tokyo Disneyland, which, for those of us, most people who know, it was modeled after the Magic Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to check that out and, see a few of their things that they have that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And obviously Disney Sea, which almost, outside of
the God
Toy
Park,
Story,
the goat.
Yeah. outside of Toy Story Mania and, in a different version of Indiana Jones, it's mm-hmm. pretty much a completely original park.
Yep.
So the impetus of going, was number one, an amazing airfare sale.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you, United and all Nippon Airways, or however you say it, ANA.
Yeah.
We're not only going to experience Christmas time at Tokyo Disneyland, which many people consider is the best Christmas celebration, even though Japan gets all in big into Christmas, but for them it's like their Valentine's Day it's like their Valentine's Day for some reason.
Wow.
But not only do we get the Christmas stuff, which means the Christmas shows, Haunted Mansion Holiday, It's a Very Merry Small World, and Country Bear Christmas, which is something I never got to see at Disney World. You get the 35th anniversary celebration.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we have our one parade here at Magic Kingdom. They run three parades mm-hmm. during this time of year. You get the 35th anniversary parade, you get the Christmas parade, and you get the thing that I have wanted to see for years and actually, for the most part, have avoided videos of. To see the electrical parade, Dream Lights.
Mm-hmm.
On top of all the other entertainment.
Yeah,
and the new nighttime spectacular.
The biggest thing I was afraid to see is the whole Universal story of the Society of Adventurers and Explorers and that. That observatory and it looks gorgeous.
Yeah,
and
I mean their version of Tower of the Terror
High Tower.
Yeah, they have a unique version of Tower of Terror. So I'm excited. We will be all in all the social medias, and then when we get back, we will be posting some vlogs to YouTube. But we'll be on social media the entire time there because one of the nice things, especially when you go to I'm sure you can do it here, but especially when you go to international places, it's running a Wi-Fi hotspot, because especially a place like Tokyo, you need to be able to have access to the internet to get around. But, so Thrill Geek's going to Tokyo in December, and
arigato.
We know we have some fans over in Japan, so
I didn't know that.
We
Japan's still the our number two audience for the podcast.
Wow, that's amazing. So, I didn't know that.
It's, mm-hmm. So we're off to Japan in December, and we can't wait to experience and also to bring it to everyone here. And we'll probably, after I get back, probably have an entire podcast devoted to just talking
about.
That's
amazing. You're going to be like a day ahead of us, and it's going to be, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's wild. It's going to be nuts, but that's our big announcement, is Thrill Geek's going to Japan. So.
Awesome.
Yay!
Woohoo!
So, for everyone, we are at Thrill Geek on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/Thrill Geek. Please like and follow our Facebook page, and that's where we do most of our live streams. We are youtube.com/Thrill Geek. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, and where you can see highlights from Halloween Horror Nights from every single house, every single scare zone. And we may have a couple of videos we put up here soon from the final night of Halloween Horror Nights. And remember, for the latest in theme park and pop culture news, it is thrillgeek.com. And of course, you're listening to the Thrill Geek podcast, available where all podcasts are sold.
Sold.
So,
but we're free.
Yeah. Besides Tokyo, we have IAPA coming up, which we will be at. And now that Halloween Horror Nights is over, besides me being depressed and consuming large amounts of Halloween candy that's on sale, we're gonna be forced into the holiday season here soon.
It literally kicks off
real soon
at Disney this week.
So
later this week, this coming weekend.
As much as I talk about it on Twitter, I'm excited. I love the holiday season. And especially at I say this every year, SeaWorld is my favorite part for the holidays. Mm-hmm. And apparently they're adding some really cool stuff this year. So. I'm excited to check it out, but for now, I'm going to be in my depressed state while I sob over no Halloween Horror Nights for the next couple
Clint,
weeks.
Clint, you listen to Gulls Down hot Butterbeer. I mean, you can't be good all that, so...
Which I had my...
Hot Butterbeer helps, so...
Which I, really quick, by the way, I had my... Cheryl had her first one the other day. I introduced her to it, and she is now officially hooked on to Hot Butterbeer, so...
Wow.
All right. Let's get out of here. Thanks, guys, for listening. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Scary later. Where are you available on social media?
Where can people find you?
So you can follow me all on my Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat, all at Skywalker Bra. It's got Brian, and like I said, I mean, for these two guys, I love them both. Thank you guys so much. You guys are awesome, and I'm so great to be part of this group, because you guys are awesome.
Yes, we are. Thank you. You're welcome.
Just let me brush off my shoulder here. You can't see it, but no, you're welcome, Brian. And thank you for all your input and everything. And because you keep up on things sometimes more than I do. So
I try my best.
You're my go-to sometimes. So I appreciate everything you do. So
thank you, Clint.
Alrighty.
All right, guys. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll see you guys again next week.
See you in the parks.
Scare you later.